Good morning. Thanks so much for tuning in to KRBD Ketchikan. It's 25 minutes after 8, and on this Monday, we are continuing our discussion about emergency preparedness. And everyone, do you have all your plans together? Now, today, we're talking about implementing that plan, things you should think about, and practicing your plan in case there is an emergency. Joining me this morning, we have Fire Chief Abner Hoag and also Corey Patron, the Village Public Safety Officer in Saxman. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Maria. Thanks for having us again.
Thank you. And I went to ready.alaska.gov and printed out, it's just a three-page thing, four pages, I guess, although it's more of a cover, that gives you information about getting your emergency kit together for your 7 days. It's right up front. If you go to ready.alaska.gov, you can get that information, and it gives you a 12-week plan to get your emergency kit together. So I have to be honest, I have not done all of these steps myself, but I will start working on it. And so just as a thought, looking at week one, if you haven't done it yet, here's something to think about. Get together a first aid kit. Make sure you have it with up-to-date items in it. You should have a gallon of water per person and 1 day of food. So those are just a few things. That's just part of the few items that you get. Also, like a container to start putting your kit together with. But anyway, just something to think about. I think everybody can do that.
I also wanted to mention ready.alaska.gov is a great site for resources and information. The U.S. government has a site as well. It's ready.gov. And if you go to ready.gov/make-a-plan, they have some really good information there on how to put together a basic emergency plan for you and your family as well.
Okay. And last time we had a caller call in with a question, and you had more information, Abner?
Yes, we received a call during last week's show asking about NOAA weather radios and whether their person's older NOAA weather radio would work, and how you can make sure that your radio is working. And I briefly mentioned that there's a weekly test, and I said I would get back with the information on exactly when those take place, etc. So what I found is that NOAA does do a required weekly test of NOAA weather radios. Those happen on Wednesdays, and they do have a set time. We weren't sure if they did when we talked last week. Those happen between 11 a.m. and noon every Wednesday. They also do a monthly test, which happens on the first Wednesday of the month, and when they do that, they won't do the 11 to noon one. They just do the single weekly test. So they don't set you off twice in that first week of the odd-numbered months. They just do the weekly test, and that one happens at 8:50 a.m., according to their website. So I think you give them a little bit of leeway by a few minutes because everybody's clocks read different. But if you have a NOAA weather radio, listen to it on Wednesdays any week between 11 and noon, and it should pick up that weekly test. If it's not going off, then you need to do some further investigation to find out what's going on.
Now, on that weekly test, is it continuous, or there's just a single test sometime between there?
So there's a single test sometime between there. So have your weather radio set for alert mode and have it near you during that 11 to noon time frame, and you should hear it go off. It starts off with a loud beep, and then they voice announcement saying that this is the required weekly test.
Okay, and also Richard Harney has joined us. Welcome, and thanks for being here. And I think we brought you in to talk a bit about the planning here in the community and flood planning for floods in a sense, or rules related to flooding.
Sure. So it's the National Flood Insurance Program is really what I'm here to speak about.
Okay.
And we don't get too many floods around here, but every once in a while we do have some flooding that happens, mostly down on Ketchikan Creek, but some of the coastal properties as well.
And as we've been talking about the last several weeks, this is about emergency planning, and there are many different things that can happen. And, you know, don't want this to happen, but it is possible that a dam could break and flooding could occur if there was a big earthquake or something happened. So why don't I go ahead and can we start with you and talk about flood planning and the insurance?
Sure, no problem. So back in 1990, we were mapped here in the Ketchikan Gateway Borough. primarily just the city of Ketchikan was mapped, Carlana Creek, Hoadley Creek, Schoenbar Creek, and Ketchikan Creek. They were studied, and there was floodplains put around it. Floodplains down in the lower 48, they are mapped so that way individuals will know whether or not they're in a floodway or if they're outside of it. What that means to the general homeowner is their home insurance, if they're getting a mortgage, they're going to be having to get flood insurance as well. And so as part of that flood insurance, buying a home that's FDIC insured means that you have to get that flood insurance. And so that means that your premium is going to go pretty high if you're built in a flood zone. Here we only have a few areas. Those creeks are the only ones that are mapped. For the most part, most people are outside of those. We don't have very many policies on the books. Anyone that owns homes in those areas, for the most part, own them outright. But there are some that are on the fringe, and so the insurance companies do require them to, the mortgage companies require them to get flood insurance.
So if you own the home, it's all paid for. It's up to you, your choice, whether or not you have insurance?
Correct. Yeah, so if you have a mortgage, are you required to have it? It's recommended to be prepared, and just a good insurance policy is to have it. Anyone on the coastal properties outside of the mapped flood zones, they are also required to have flood insurance if they have a mortgage.
Now, what if you're in an area, you have a home in an area that is not in a identified flood zone? Is it wise, I guess, to get flood insurance? Because I know there's some houses that during this last storm were flooded, and I'm guessing they were outside of those zones. Would your insurance in any way cover you?
So I want to first say that I'm not an insurance salesman or any sort of representation for the insurance companies. However, it's been explained to me by the FEMA folks that any water damage, if you have a flood insurance insurance policy, that you will be covered. So if that's a water main that breaks or stormwater backup, any of that sort of stuff is covered. I've never had to try it or test it, but that's what I've been told. So the reason that I bring that up, the 1990 mapping, is that we're going through the last 3 years, we've been undergoing a new mapping program. It's called the Risk Map. And the state of Alaska identified Ketchikan as one of those communities, coastal communities, that needed to be remapped. And we ranked high enough on their score chart to get remapped by FEMA. And so FEMA over the last 3 years has been coming through doing meetings with community officials to get this new map established. And so they went through and they flew aerials and did some LIDAR. And so they've done a lot of good science. And I say good science, it makes sense to me. The engineering behind it, the scientists that have been conducting it, it seems rational. And so those new maps are going to be coming into effect here in the next year or so. In January, they'll be coming through to do the date hasn't been established yet, but coming through to do a public meeting, an open house forum for all the public. So if anyone is on the coast or near a river, or you're just interested in general in flood insurance or concerned about your house, please just keep that aware of January. Just be ready for a meeting to happen in January after the first of the year. Not quite sure when, but we'll be sending out letters to all those along the coast and anyone that's in a flood zone.
And were you saying that something changed that made this need to be remapped or redone? Was there a flaw in the last time it was mapped, or just rules have changed, or what's the reasoning?
It's a more comprehensive look at the community. The 1990, they came through and they did just the studies of those four or five creeks. And so this one is much broader in scope. It goes all the way from Herring Cove, a little bit past Herring Cove, all the way out to Waterfall, Settlers Cove. And so it's covering everything. And so the big change with this is that those folks that are outside of the city limits who have not had a mapped area, the coastal properties, they're actually going to be mapped. And so now it's not going to be that optional. The mortgage companies aren't going to have the option to require flood insurance. Now they're going to be required to have flood insurance. So if you're built on the coast outside the city limits, this could be a change for you. And your insurance company could be or your mortgage company could be contacting you when these maps take effect and telling you that, hey, you're gonna need to get insurance. So I recommend you coming in and chatting with us, chatting with me at the Borough Planning Department. We're at 1900 First Avenue in Suite 126, the old White Cliff building. You can come chat with me. I can get you a picture of your an aerial of your property, and we can talk about the flood, the new boundaries.
Okay, good information to have, and especially with the potential of, you know, if something happens. And are you in a floodplain, in a flooding zone?
And that was my question for Richard. So currently, if I understand you correct, only properties located within the city have been mapped for that national program. If someone does live near a creek within the city limits and they wanted to know if they're within that designated floodplain, how would they find that out?
They can come and contact us at the planning department. I'm the community floodplain manager or administrator for the community, and so I can help them out and get them a picture of where their house is in relation to the flood zones, and then they can take that and contact whoever they would like to contact, their insurance company or their mortgage company. And there are possibilities for trying to remove yourself from those, remove your house outside of those floodplains. You can do some flood proofing. You can, you know, engineer some flood proofing techniques to reduce your flood insurance policies. But yeah, they can get hold of me, and our number is 907-228-6610.
Okay. I had one more comment on that, and I guess it's important to know when you live in a floodplain, a designated floodplain that falls within the National Flood Insurance Program. If you do, even if you don't have a mortgage and a disaster happens, a federally declared disaster, and FEMA comes in and is providing financial relief for people affected, if you lived in a floodplain and you didn't have insurance, required or not, your benefits are extremely limited by FEMA if you are in that designated floodplain and you don't have the insurance. So it's still important to know whether you're in that zone and to have the insurance if it's appropriate.
That is so true. They make a very big point about that, whether or not if you're going to be able to get that relief if there is a disaster. And, yeah, good point.
And there is a 30-day waiting period on policies like that. So, you know, people in Florida or, you know, where they have these floods happen often, they always talk about that. If you listen close to the stories and people who waited and waited to sign up, they oftentimes won't issue the policy when there's an ongoing disaster. And if you didn't get it more than 30 days prior, then it doesn't have to be honored.
Okay, so that sounds like that's also part of your plan. Find out if you are located in one of those zones and look into the possibility of getting flood insurance.
Absolutely.
So that is kind of our focus today is, you know, at this point, you should be getting your plan together, have it together, and then actually practicing it and implementing it. So what are some tips, I guess, of things that you should have in your plan that you should be practicing and implementing?
Practicing and building out is the other part of the topic this week. And we've talked about the basics. We talked about, you know, signing up for emergency alerts so that you know when something bad's happening. We've talked about having a plan for where you're going to seek shelter. We've talked about the evacuation routes, and we have those maps available on our preparedness page on the fire department website. We briefly touched on having a communications plan with your family and knowing how to contact your family and who your family can contact to find out if you're okay. One of the big ones that I want to mention today is you start to look at building out that plan and expanding on it is financial preparedness. That's a big thing that people often forget about or they just don't take the time to do it. You've got the basics, you're going to be safe, but now, long term, what are you going to do? And I did, as promised, update some of that information on our website for how to get plans on the fire department preparedness page. I just added a link on there this morning to an emergency financial first aid kit piece. And so some things, basics to think about having in that building out your plan piece would be copies of photo IDs for yourself and your house and your household members, birth certificates, social security cards, pet records, medical records, doctor's information, things like that that you probably have them scattered in different places around your house, but you need to at least have a copy of them, or it's recommended to at least have a copy of them in that preparedness kit so that if everything else goes away, at least you've got that copy. And what I didn't realize until I was actually researching this a little bit, if you don't have your Social Security card, you can't apply for FEMA benefits. You have to have that card when you go to apply, and I found that interesting, but, stuff to think about. So I've got a whole bunch more information linked from our webpage, and I recommend taking a close look at some of that.
Okay, and Corey Patron, you are here.
I am here. These guys have been doing such a good job. I've been just letting them have at it.
And what is your role, I guess, over in Saxman and in respect to preparedness?
So I'm still a VPSO sergeant over there in Saxman, and I work with Abner and the other fire chief, Rydeen, and occasionally I see Richard here. And just kind of working with community and family preparedness. I work with Jay Henry, the CERT coordinator. So I help him with the trainings on the community emergency response team programs. So we'll probably be talking about that, or he'll be here talking about that next week. He's probably cringing right now as I say that. But Jay, you're coming next week. But it really does come into when you start looking at family preparedness. The first thing you're going to do is identify those hazards. What are the hazards? Are you in a flood zone? So if that's the case, then you're going to identify what mitigation actions can you take to lessen those risks of being in a flood zone. And then you can get information usually from your community, your borough, the fire departments. You reach out to them and say, hey, what are the typical hazards that happen out here? And what are some mitigation acts that I can take to kind of lessen that? Lessen the risk, lessen the impact. And then you kind of go from there. The next step, talking with your family about those hazards and things you can do to prepare for it. Get together with your family and make a plan. We've got these great Map Your Neighborhood kits at the fire departments, little flip charts. You can sit down with your family and you can go through real step by step on how do you make a plan for your family and how do you practice those plans. You know, so then it's preparing, gathering your equipment together, getting your economic kits together, getting some cash on hand, kind of putting your little kits out. You know, you got to have the stuff you carry with you personally to be prepared on a day-to-day basis. But then you also need that go bag. You always hear about people talking about go bags, right? Your bug out bags, things like that, right? So you've got a backpack maybe that you keep that you can just grab and go. But then maybe you've got a kit that's a little more expanded than that in your car. So it's not in your house. So if something happens to your house, you can get out to your car and you know you got a kit out there. Maybe you've got a bigger kit than that out in your shed that's got like a 7 days worth of food and some other items like your duct tape, your Visqueen, even fishing poles, right? Because we know that we can hit the water and get fish around here. So you just kind of look at it in those like different incremental ways of preparing yourself, your family, and your community, but then making sure that you don't have all your eggs in one basket. So being truly prepared is spreading out, you know, your preparedness resources. And then Abner touched on a little bit is having those contacts outside the community, having a contact point in another state, a family member. Like in Oregon, I've got a family member that we can all contact there. We'll say, hey, I'm not home, but I'm safe. So let the family know when they call you that I'm over here and I'm okay. And then I've got a single point of contact. I can call, hey, did the wife call you? Have the kids called you? And so you've got that single point of contact outside of the community that you can all call into. And then kind of share what you're doing with your friends, family members, and the community. Let them know that, hey, I'm preparing. Are you preparing? Do you have your kit together? Did you know this training's happening over at the fire department? Just kind of spread the preparedness word around to try to influence other people to also be prepared. Because if your neighbor's prepared and maybe all your resource stashes have gone down, but your neighbor was prepared, you can go to them and they can help you get through those critical times. Or if their stash goes down and you've got yours, then you can help your neighbor get through it. So the more prepared we all are, the more prepared you are. So.
And what we have been saying throughout all of these discussions is you don't know when something is going to happen, and you want to have at least, you know, your 3 days or whatever it may be, because first responders are not going to be able to get to you. They're going to be busy. If it's, you know, truly a big emergency, they're going to be busy with that, and you'll need to take care of yourself and your family, and just need to at least have some of the basics there, and even a little bit, because I'll admit myself, it seems overwhelming when you look at, I need all this food and water and this and that and the other thing. But if you just take little steps and say, let me put my contact information or even my documents, let me get those documents together in a dry place, backup copies of stuff, your probably your credit card numbers, bank account numbers, all sorts of stuff like that as well, financial information, because if you get separated from that, and at least you have that backup.
Definitely. You can do a lot with even a plastic coffee can, right? You know, we all drink the red one with the black top, right? So save a couple of those and fill one of those up with preparedness supplies and stick it in your car and forget about it. Have copies of your important documents there. Your medical insurance cards, throw a $20 bill or two in there, you know, have some cash on hand. Cause if we lose power, if we have an extended power outage, I know we never lose power around Ketchikan. It never happens. Right. So, so have some cash on hand for when the store can't take your card. So if you need to go buy baby food, you know, things like that, that are critical for you right now that you can't wait a day for, then you're prepared to do that.
Okay, and we do, if there are any people out there who have tips or questions, you can give us a call, 225-9655, 1-800-557-5723. We have about 10 minutes left or so. So if you have any questions, do give us a call. You mentioned also important to have that outside contact so that you can let people know that you're safe, everything's okay. What I found interesting with the hurricanes that have been happening and the fires, everybody goes to social media and posts, which they also have that set up as a thing you can click on and say, I am safe from this.
It's a great disaster resource, yeah.
It's a good way to help reduce the amount of communication that has to take place over the stressed networks during a disaster when people reach out on social media. But keep in mind, that shouldn't be your only plan, because as we know, especially in a location like ours, our communication systems are one of the fragile pieces. We only have a couple connections to the outside world. Large disaster, that network is likely to go down at least for a little while, and so you need to have other plans as well. But it's a great resource, a great way to let people know that you're okay and not have to make all those individual phone calls or send those individual messages.
And it's hard because in many of these cases, you don't have electricity.
Right.
So finding a place, and in most cases, there is a central shelter or something like that you can go to and get information out to your loved ones.
It's always interesting. The power goes out at my house here occasionally. And, you know, when that happens, all I got to do is switch over to my phone and I have internet on there still. And I always wonder how that keeps working. When everything else has no power, the internet on my phone works great. And so I can keep browsing or doing whatever I'm doing and entertain myself during that time. And my point of that is a lot of the critical communication structure has backup systems. They have backup power. And so those systems do oftentimes keep working. Especially in more minor disasters, those systems will still be up even when your primary systems are affected.
And to kind of tag on to that, being prepared, those emergency radios, some of those NOAA weather radios, they have solar panels on them. Not that they work around here all that great, but they also have the hand cranks that can get you some power, and you can at least charge your phone for that real quick send out of a text or an email or what have you if you need to. So
that's a super good point, because what do you do when something does happen, the power goes out? You're using your phone for a flashlight, right? Because we've all got that app now. You're searching to try to find information. So, you know, the next thing you know, 8 hours later, and your phone's going dead, but the power's not back. So suddenly, let's say that turns into a prolonged power outage. Take an extreme weather event, a, you know, severe winter storm that we get here, okay? So if you're going to plan, start out by planning for that. Let's say we lose power for a week, okay? Well, once you've depleted your cell phone, then what? Right? Do you have a backup for that? Do you have a way to get your cell phone charged back up? A lot of us over the last couple of years, right, got those hand crank radios. Do you still have those around? I've got a few of them left, you know, so those are great for recharging your phones, but it's part of building your plan. Say, oh yeah, I've got those so I can recharge my phone. Well, you're planning now. You're prepared for that.
And any step that you take to prepare ahead of time is a good step. It's going to reduce the load on the emergency responders. It's going to help you get through a disaster. So, yes, it can be really overwhelming looking at these lists of all these things to do, to make a plan and to practice the plan and all the things that should be included in a kit. But realize you don't have to do this all at once. Start to take some step now, and you'll just fall into that pattern, and eventually, before you know it, you'll have the whole thing set up. So take it in small bites.
And generally, Gage came in to join us.
Some of the things that people need to remember, too, is that I know we all like to get rid of our landlines because we don't want to pay for them. However, when I became disabled, the first thing they told me is you never get rid of your landline. Always have a phone that you don't have to charge. You don't have the straight line to... the cable, not battery operated.
Oh man, my landlines are cordless.
Yeah, no, that can't have that. Well, you need the old, like, you know, where the dial.
Well, you know, the problem with that, and I do not have a cell phone. I have a landline. And the thing is, though, you can, it's very difficult to find an old phone that isn't cordless. And mm-hmm. that is something.
So if you have one, don't get rid of it.
Don't get rid of it.
Don't get rid of it. You can buy them, but they're like $20. But you always want to have one.
It's retro, you're cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Where do you get them?
I've seen them. I still see them around at Walmart.
Really? Because I was looking for one. We do have one. We actually do have one here at KRBD, and we do have backup generators here. But that is set up for that purpose. If we, you know, lost our power and didn't have the general phone line, we just plug that little princess phone in from the
1990s. As we say, it's the hamburger phone, right?
Yeah, if you still have one of those hamburger phones, just hold on to it.
I used to have a dinosaur phone. It was, it'd roar when it rang. It was very fun. All right. So, yeah, that's an interesting concept, too. Yeah, because landline, it usually, unless they get severed or something, you still have a landline.
Well, yeah, and then make sure that that your contacts are always, you always have one extra in case they're out on vacation. If they're gone, you need one extra person or two extra people.
And something that comes to mind, too, is everyone has all their phone numbers stored in their phone, have it on paper. I have a little phone book.
I think that's the demise of my memory. That's why I'm late.
But, so people think about that, too, of have phone contacts, have that in your emergency kit, because if your phone dies and that's where you're storing all that info, you've lost it.
You know, when I was a kid, all I had to remember was my home phone number, right? And so now the kids have to learn what's mom's number, what's dad's number, what's brother's number, what's grandma's number, grandpa's number. There's no one single number for the kids to remember anymore. So how are the kids going to know all the different phone numbers? My kids have great memories, so they do a really good job. I have a hard time remembering my wife's phone number.
Well, you know, and that's a good point. Like with your kids, if you have one pocket in their backpack and you put that information in there in a plastic sack, and then and this goes for being out on the boat. My parents, you know, they used to have the fanny packs. Well, they were way before. When I was a kid, we didn't have fanny packs, but they would sew a little pocket into our life vest that you put an extra, like, matches and the whole kit. So if we went overboard or the boat went under, we still had something in our pocket or in our life jacket that for a survival kit. But sure.
And laminate it. Walmart, $20, you can buy a laminating machine. I've got one at my office. If you catch me at my office and you swing by, I'm happy to laminate a phone card for your kids.
So you could always get them a little fanny pack and stick it in there. Stick all that stuff in there, like a little kit with all the numbers. Okay, if this happens and you're stuck at school, these are the people, when they let you call, call.
Okay.
Yeah, fanny pack. I don't know if you can even find those anywhere.
They're coming back.
They're coming back.
What? Unfortunately, some of the 80s stuff is coming back, and that's one of them.
New trend, survival kit fanny packs.
That's it right there.
I like it.
And they actually have hiking ones that are like that. They don't call them that anymore. No. They call them hiking something. Well, we're running out of time. Does anyone have any last-minute tips, thoughts that you want to share as we're
prepare yourself, prepare your family, and prepare your neighborhood.
And get to know your neighbors.
Yeah.
Make
disasters
sure you
don't wait. Make your plan now.
Survival is optional.
There you go.
That's a...
Give yourself your own power.
Okay, well, thank you, everyone, for being here, and probably could have a lot more we could talk about. We are next week going to be back and learn about a little more about ways you can get involved in the community to help with the variety of organizations here that respond to disasters and emergencies. So do tune in next week, and we have some other guests throughout the rest of the month that will be coming in and discussing certain safety topics.